shit. The living hell of emotional flashbacks. Ever found yourself drowning in unbearable shame, panic, or despair seemingly out of nowhere? Maybe someone's tone of voice sets something off inside you, or you make a small mistake and suddenly feel like a complete failure. No clear memory, no obvious trigger, just an emotional landslide you can't stop. That's an emotional flashback, your nervous system reacting to a past trauma as if it's happening right now. These experiences aren't logical, they're visceral. Your body responds as if you're a child again, powerless, terrified, desperate, even if nothing bad is happening in the moment. Signs you might be in an emotional flashback. Your reaction feels way out of proportion to the situation. You feel small, helpless, panicked, or like you're going to die. You're flooded with shame or consumed by the inner critic. You can't concentrate, regulate, or pull yourself out of it. You're stuck in obsessive thoughts or compulsive behaviors. You feel like you're going to die, even if you know that sounds dramatic. So what sets them off? Emotional flashbacks don't need a big, obvious event to get activated. The part of your brain that scans for danger, the amygdala, doesn't wait for logic. Research shows it forms a gut-level opinion within milliseconds. If anything in the present moment resembles something painful from your past, even slightly, it sounds the alarm and you get launched into survival mode. External triggers. Someone not texting you back. Being criticized or misunderstood. A certain tone of voice or facial expression. Authority figures. Or perceived rejection. Asking for help. Making a mistake. Being ignored. Being seen. Visiting your parents. Internal triggers. That voice that says, you're too much. You're not enough. You'll always ruin everything. Feeling like a failure even when nothing went wrong. Perfectionism, shame spirals, the need to fix, control, save, that vague sense of doom with no clear reason. While we can learn to identify our most common triggers, it's probably unrealistic to think we'll go the rest of our lives without ever being thrown into an emotional flashback again. The truth is, they're going to happen, and while there are plenty of tools we can reach for in the moment, the most important one is self-compassion, and for adult children of dysfunctional families, that's often the hardest thing to access. Pete Walker reminds us that emotional flashbacks are messages from our wounded inner child, a part of us crying out for love, safety, and protection we didn't get when we needed it the most. When we meet that pain with harshness or shame, we re-traumatize the part of us that's already suffering. But when we respond with compassion, when we listen, soothe, and stay with that inner child, we begin to show ourselves what safety really feels like. So questions are, can you think of a time when you've experienced an emotional flashback? What are some common triggers for you? Have you ever been able to recognize in the moment that you're in the midst of an emotional flashback? And what's your current relationship with self-compassion? As much as I hate emotional flashbacks, I'm kind of grateful for them because that's what allowed me to come to terms with the fact that my childhood was the cause of my issues in romantic relationships. And I wonder if had I not been able to have those two aha moments of there's no way that the way that I'm feeling right now could be about this person. And that number two, that this is a feeling that I felt often as a child. I just wonder how much longer and if would I have just gone on forever, just like not being able to figure out what the hell was wrong with me. So I'm grateful for that. And I'm curious if who else has had whose aha moments also came from experiencing an emotional flashback. I love that there's hands already up. And I was reflecting about like, when do I first remember experiencing an emotional flashback? And it was definitely when I was a teenager in a relationship and just not being able to get a hold of my boyfriend. And that is the feeling that I drank over and really, really, really fueled my alcoholism. Was just, I had no idea what the feeling was at the time, but it's really been interesting experiencing emotional flashbacks with the knowledge of what that being in the moment, being able to witness in the moment that you're in the midst of an emotional flashback is like such a like a trippy experience, because this really doesn't help much. Like it does help some, like it does help. But at the same time, it's so frustrating because it's like, you want to be like, all right, I spot it. Like I'm in a flashback. Can you just turn off now? Like, I see what's going on here. We're not reacting to what's actually going on. So can you please stop making me feel like I want to fucking die? Because this is getting kind of old. So I just experienced one a couple weeks ago. And it was actually the same day. It was later in the day. I came to the Sunday meeting and I shared about how earlier in the day that I was like debating whether or not to like text this guy that I'm talking to. And I was trying to decide, am I reaching out for connection or am I like, you know, trying to get reassurance and validation? And then later that evening, I, of course, it's always not receiving a text for me. It's always not receiving a text. And by hour three, I really started spinning out. And I tried to self-soothe. I tried connecting to that part of me myself. It is so difficult to try to do that on your own because it is so hard for there to be any sort of sense of self in those moments. Like you were just like so completely blended. There was, you know, a real understanding that I was, I hate to use the word that I was overreacting, but that I was having an outsized proportion, but it just like got worse. And thankfully what, you know, Pete Walker has all of these tools and steps in the book of what to do. But I'll tell you what is most helpful for me is calling somebody else who gets it. And I reached out to Teresa and she was able to do like some guided parts work with me. And I was able to connect with that little girl who's the little girl that, you know, wakes up in the middle of the night and feels like she's going to die if she can't sleep in her mom's bed. And I'm just so grateful for you, Teresa. And thanks for being there for me. And it definitely helped to like unblend some, but it was not going to go away like completely, you know, it wasn't going to go away completely. And it was, of course, it was like right after I finished the parts work, like I heard back from him. It's like, of course. But one thing that I did want to share about that is before I could access that little girl, that exile, there was a frustrated part that I had to ask to step out of the way. And I had some time to think about this some more afterwards. And I think that this is actually a reflection of my growth because there was not a shaming part that showed up for me at all. Like I wasn't shaming myself for feeling that way. I wasn't shaming myself for you should be further along in your healing. There was just a part of me that was frustrated, like enough already, like, you know, enough already ready with this feeling. Like this feeling is so old and familiar. And, you know, I think it's also a part that's just frustrated that understands that we didn't choose this, you know, like that we didn't choose to have to feel this way. So I think that that was interesting, but that really ties into the whole self-compassion piece because for me, that feeling is tied to so many of my limiting beliefs of like, I'm unlovable, I'm unlikable, I'm annoying, I'm pathetic, I'm desperate. You're going to decide that you don't like me. You know, I was seen as a nuisance by my parents for having that feeling. I was teased by other kids at school for being the girl that would freak out at sleepovers. And it was the feeling that later in young adulthood would push my friends away because they didn't get it. And I was like a needy friend. And they couldn't understand why in every relationship I acted this way. And so like there's like this deep sense of shame associated with that feeling, and that feeling is going to cause the very thing that I'm so afraid of, you know, and push people away. And so I think the fact that, you know, I was able to have a frustrated part come up instead of a shame part come up is great. And I think that just like the fact of the matter is like it said in the reading, it's like it's really unrealistic for me to think that that's like ever gonna go away completely. You know, I think I'm always gonna be especially like in an early stage of talking to somebody, like that just, that shit is just so deeply embedded in my nervous system. And just like, thank God I do know that it passes. But when you're in it, when you're in the moment, I mean, it really just feels like it's never gonna go away. And really, like what your head thinks, like really means absolute shit, you know? It means absolute shit. So I'm just so grateful that I know what's going on and that I had that realization, because I do think that there's got to be so many people out there that are experiencing this that really don't have any idea that this is what they're experiencing. So go ahead, Mike.
Hey fam, Mike here, and I, holy fuck, this was my weekend. This was all my weekend. I am so glad to be talking about this because
So glad
truth
to be
be told,
talking about this.
I don't want to at all because it hurt. Like you said, it feels like you're going to die, and it's the worst feeling to know full well I'm fine. Nothing's changed. What does the evidence say? Nothing has changed, and yet still. Core in the gut, just like feeling like I'm going to die. My boyfriend went to Iowa this weekend to visit his family, and we're about 4 months in, and it's going really well. It's feeling really healthy. I'm feeling really stable. And went away, and it was like too soon for me to meet the parents. So, like, go for the weekend and went to Kansas City, visit some friends and stuff. We've been like texting and stuff through the time. So, like, the text was there, but he didn't call on Tuesday or then like Friday. And then Saturday came, and you could tell it was starting for me of like, oh shit, I'm gonna lose my shit over this. And that thing of like trying to be like, I don't wanna be needy. So don't state any needs at all, versus where a conversation of if I needed to talk on the phone, I should have just picked up and called and said, hey, how are you doing? Can you talk right now? Oh no, you can't. Great, call me later or not. I'm okay. All I wanted was a 5 minute call. And I couldn't bring myself to do it, but needed it so bad and hated that I felt like I needed it and felt so stupid. I felt like a dumb little kid. And so then he did call and we talked, but it's that thing where you get what you want and then you like want to like cut it off to be like, well, I'm going to make you miss me by not talking and cutting off, because then he did have time to talk. And I was like, well, you didn't call me the last two. I didn't state any of these things. I was just like, hey, what's up? Like, why didn't you call? What you called last? And I was comparing to last month's trip when he went, because he did call and we video chatted, and it was like, again, I'm like, what does it fucking matter of the phone? Like, you're texting. It's not like radio silence. That's one thing, but it was like so oversized to it. And then Sunday comes along, and Sunday gets bad. It gets real, real bad. And I start really internalizing a lot. And so like get to that night, and I'm close to a panic attack, and I'm losing it. And I am calling my sponsor, I'm calling my friends, not wanting to, but doing the thing. And I felt really dumb because I did all the right things. When he was away, I was like, let's go to extra meetings. Let's talk to your friends. Let's go to brunch. Let's have a dinner. Let's do all the things. But like in comparison, he was busier. So it was that like I kept comparing, and comparison is the thief of joy. We all know this from AA. And I did the thing, and I sent a text, asked ChatGPT, how do I say to my boyfriend that I wish you would call, but he's texting, but it's okay, but it's not, but it's kind of this. And I got some helpful kind of guidance. I don't recommend always talking to ChatGPT. I know we do that a lot, but also it was helpful to kind of get some guidance around it, to kind of like get my thoughts in a coherent way of like in a non-codependent way. Because I didn't want to be coda. I just didn't want to be my fucking mom, is what I felt like. And I felt like that's what I was doing. And I reached out to him. It's just like, hey, just want to reach out about some of my feelings. I'm not doing so hot tonight. And he was like out with friends and like drinking and stuff. So like wasn't in a great place for it, but like called and was like, oh no, I'm sorry you're feeling that way. And I'm like, it's okay. It's not okay. But like the whole point was I just wished I was there. And it was that fear of missing out. It was the fear that other people are having fun without me. And if this, then this. If he doesn't call, then it means I'm not a priority. Means I'm not important. Means he doesn't like me. Means I don't have value. All these things that I'm sitting here being like, that's not true. None of this is true. None of this has changed. None of it makes sense. And it's just overwhelming, like a maelstrom in your head of just like fucked up. So I woke up every hour on the hour all night long, just wishing he would call, like a sad puppy, and it felt shitty. And the next morning at work, I had to take a half day at work because I'm like, I can't do this shit. He was coming back that day, but I'm like, I need to get a hand. I need to not have this oversized reaction to him. This is my shit. There is a part that is in relation to him that I will get to. I have only once ever called an emergency session with my therapist, and I did, and luckily also had my regular therapist, because I have two, because one for EMDR, one for talk therapy, and insurance pays for it. Why the fuck not have two therapists? I'm here for it. And it was really good to kind of turn it down from 11 to like a more manageable, like, how do I talk about this? How do I bring it up? And I got back that night and we had dinner and stuff and sat on the couch and just kind of talked it out. Just stated some of my feelings about like, hey, wasn't doing so hot. This is kind of how I felt. Do you remember how earlier in the week I said, I really appreciate you calling on trips and stuff. And he was like, well, yeah, but you know, last time you blah, blah, blah. He had perfectly valid reasons why he didn't. It was just like, I was busy with the family and stuff. And I'm like, I get that. I completely understood it, but the feeling was still there. And it was a big step for me to bring that up and to trust that this whole thing was about trust. Do I trust him enough that he's not going to run away if I say, hey, I had strong feelings about our relationship and it freaked me out and I wasn't doing okay. Can you hold that with me and not try and fix it and not run away from it? And a therapist was right. It was a great opportunity. Like, it wasn't a fight, but it was a thing, you know, that like really shows how other people show up in conflict and relationship. He did great. And it was a great thing that brought us closer together. And I'm really proud of it, of how I handled it. Not that I didn't want to do this shit. I wanted nothing to do with this, but I'm really proud of how I was able to reach out to my friends, reach out to my sponsor, reach out to my therapist, understand it, and then give myself the self-compassion to be like, it's okay that you're crazy. You're less crazy than you used to be. And like, to really break it down. And all of this to say, on Friday, I was feeling inspired before all this happened. Those of you who know me and ACA, I talked to my mom for half an hour on the phone, and it was the best conversation we've had in like 5 years. And if that's not such a fucking testament to this program and the growth that's happened, she's still the same person she's always going to be. So if you're in that situation with your family, they ain't going to change, but you can change. And I believe in each and every one of you that we can do this together. There's hope and there's healing for us, because I never thought I'd have this normal relationship again. And I'm not going down the rabbit hole of like what it's going to look like in the future. All I know is right now we're having a normal conversation. We're texting some here and there. I even texted my fucking brother, which is another huge thing for me of just doing that was a big deal. Just sending stupid dog pictures and cat pictures and whatever. It was something, it was a step, and I'm proud of it. So like, I'm really glad y'all are here. I'm really glad if you're new to this group, welcome to the shit show, because it's a fucking shit show. I'm not gonna say I'm sorry I rambled. I'm glad I got to express myself, and thank you all so much. I appreciate you all. Thanks.
Nobody rambles here.
Yeah, okay? Nobody rambles. I hate nobody that. Like, fucking oh, I'm rambles. Sorry. We're all just telling our story and we're doing a thing. So like, yes. keep rambling.
All ramble on.
Ramble on.
Thank you, Mike. That's huge. That's huge.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax tip and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
I was going to say, you want to bet about rambling before I...
How much time you got, bitch?
Okay, so Andrea, your share actually connected some dots for me in terms of my life experience. And I am someone who gets homesick, and it like does not make a lot of sense usually in context, but it does feel like I'm dying. And I can trace it all the way back to like childhood, to a point where like getting dropped off at school was the most miserable experience of my life. And I couldn't like go to summer camp that my mom worked at and stay overnight because I just wasn't home. And so she would be there like during the day, and I still would just like freak the fuck out. So anyways, that's interesting. I bet there's something to that. Emotional flashbacks are, I have an interesting relationship with them, and it primarily has shown up in my life when I am, one, like investing a lot in a relationship that I shouldn't be, usually, all that codependent stuff. And it's very predictable in that it's whenever someone makes me feel invisible or like optioned out, I freak the fuck out. And the first time I actually was conscious during a flashback is because I was listening to this podcast, and it kind of kicked off a lot of my progress because I felt myself spin up, but had the wherewithal to like stop and think about what was happening and kind of see that I was freaking out. And it was like a response that it wasn't really warranted. It was warranted that I probably should have walked away from that dynamic at the time, but I was not ready yet, and that's fine. But yeah, I feel it as like a heat and a tension in my shoulders and in my face. And if I don't express it, that all builds up, and it does, like, it's just awful. And I think prior to taking the time to actually understand my emotions and like feeling them in my body, all I knew to do was just run my mouth. If you kicked off one of my flashbacks, you would get a textbook of a text message, very well put together and thought out to make you feel awful about what you did. And I am in a place where I don't have them too often anymore. Of course, I'm not like dating or anything, so I'm sure once I put my foot back there, I'll be a wreck. But I think I'm grateful for them because it is such a key to my recovery journey of being better with people and dealing with people, because people who set me off in that capacity, that is now like an alarm for me to take a look at my hand in that relationship and what I'm allowing myself to experience. Because the way I've kind of understood at least that version of the flashback is, it is every bit of built up resentment towards people that I care about who flagrantly disregard basic respect, I think, is how I would experience it. And if I don't speak up, then I will just continue to accept the suck until I numb out completely, and then I'm just not even living anymore. But I found that pushing through that discomfort of just speaking up and going through the cringe and at least taking a moment to step back and recognize what's happening, give myself a second to cool down, and then like say what I need to say with a little bit of a cooler head has been life-changing in a way. Not that it has stopped them from happening, but it has changed like the course of how I experience things and how I approach things. Because usually if it's someone that's not there to have a healthy dynamic, they are repulsed by it because it is just like a, hey, you did this, which, you know, in turn, this is the way I felt about it. I just need to let you know if this happens again, like, this is what I need to do about it. This is how I'm going to react. And they'll either like call you crazy and do all that kind of stuff, in which case that's like red flag number one, or probably red flag number ever that I've missed along the way. But I found too that people who are invested in a real relationship with you, whatever the dynamic is, will at least listen. They may not agree with you and they may push back a little bit, but they will at least reflect that they understand what you're experiencing. And I think that has been such a gift to claim that for myself, because before I would just let myself become invisible. And when you do that, you're not really living your own life. And speaking up has been like the key to being myself, becoming myself, like getting back to myself. And that, as painful and shitty as the experience is a gift. So thanks for letting me share. I look forward to hearing what everybody else says.
This is a great topic. It's the shame spiral that I hit. The shame spiral that I hit whenever I have different levels of this emotional flashbacks. I have little ones and I have big ones. The little ones is where my shame spiral kind of like rides on a constant basis. of I'm not good enough, I'm gonna fuck up, I'm a failure, you know, you idiot. And then I go to a bigger ones of the emotional flashbacks. And that's when I'm not who I am here. That's when I'm a totally different person. You can't reason with me. You can't, it's like I'm in a trance. I'm this totally different dude. Like, why are you spazzing out? Why are you freaking out, right? Because just like Courtney said, it's a rapid fire, right? I'm rapid fire saying stuff. I'm not making sense a lot of times. My judgment becomes erratic of like my hands are shaking. I pace back and forth. Put my hands through my hair and just, you know, those emotional flashbacks like hijacks my body. And they're not fun. And then I'm like, oh, whoa, what the hell was all that about? You know? Meanwhile, my wife has learned that just to let me continue and not interrupt. And then let me come to, right? Let me come back to kind of like reality. I'm like, whoa, what the fuck happened? Like, that's not normal me. She knows that's not normal. That's not, that's somebody else. And what that is, that's little Andrew. That's not feeling safe. He's not feeling, he's powerless. He doesn't have, oh shit, I don't know. But I can't pull myself out of it all the time. And it's over stupid shit too. It's the dumbest things in life. It's whether it was something that was said, I've taken out of context, or it could be something that I've been, you know, it's been on my mind, and then I hit the shame spiral and I just keep going. But the thing is, it comes in waves. It comes in like every few weeks to months sometimes. And then I go like 2 or 3 months, you know, no big deal. And then it's just like, where you been, shame? Hey, good to see you. Come and play with me again. Slap me a couple times. Hit me with the tar of shame and the feathers of being a burden, right? And so I take the highs with the highs and I take the lows with the lows. And whenever I'm high, I'm good. And then whenever I'm low, I'm low. But the common denominator is I just keep showing up for these meetings a few times a week. And that's what makes it a little bit better, is sharing our stories and making sure that there's a lot of life vest on this ship that Andrew's created. So thank you for letting me share.
So this topic is great. I took screenshots and sent it to my sister, my mother-in-law, my husband. Like, holy shit. I think that I have dealt with them for so much longer than I realize. And like, I've always been told how sensitive I am. And, you know, my reactions would be instant tears or just not the usual of everybody else. And it was always embarrassing and still is. Like, at my job that I just left, there'd be so many times where I'm in hysterics over something, you know, seemingly small, maybe a little bit of criticism or something from, you know, my superior, and I'm just totally unraveled. And it, like, there was one day where I had to go in the bathroom and call my husband. Like, my breathing was so bad. He, like, when he answered the phone, he thought something was seriously wrong with me. You know, he gets all panicked. He's like, what's wrong? What happened? Are you okay? And I'm like, I just need you to, like, calm me down. So he's my emotional support human, and I kind of dump on him, which I'm starting to, like, feel guilty about, because he has his own trauma that he hasn't dealt with. Like, I would say he's an adult child as well, and I send him different podcasts, and he's kind of had all the focus on me for the last year, like trying to get me to a better place, but I don't think he has taken the time to really work through his things. And so, like, it sucks having these emotional flashbacks, because, like, just for instance, he likes to play cornhole. So there's like few weekly leagues that he'll try to go to. At least he goes to one every week, but then he'll want to go to an extra one And I encourage it because I know that it brings him happiness. But when he like goes to leave, and even as soon as I know he's going, it's like my body feels it. And I've always felt like really shitty for feeling that way. Like, I don't know. I felt like I was being manipulative. Like, I just told you to go. I told you it's fine. You can go. And then right afterwards, my insides are like burning. I don't want you to go. Why do you want to go? Like, what? That seems so crazy. And like, oh, coming to a realization like that, that's what it is. And it really, I kind of held on to that this, I don't know, that it was more so like me being jealous about him enjoying this activity with other people, because I don't have any like hobbies of my own that I do. But I don't think that that's it. I think that was just the excuse that I was putting in my head for it. But really, it's because my abandonment wound runs so deep that as soon as I know he's leaving my side, my brain knows that he's going to come back. He's not leaving. He loves me. He loves our family. Like, he's not going to abandon us. But my body goes into, like, it feels like anger. And I know it's not anger. I know it's a more coming from a pain place, but ooh, it's hard to work through recently, like, because I'm trying to be supportive, like, go do that. And then I like bite my tongue and not let him know how I'm really feeling about it as he's like getting ready to go. So it emotional flashbacks are horrendous. And I'm glad that I have a name for it now, because it makes me feel slightly less crazy. Thank you for letting me share, and thanks for having me. This community has been really just life-changing over the last month. Like, I have never talked so much about things in my life to, you know, especially people I've never even met. Like, this is crazy, but I just feel like at home. Like, I feel like listening to everybody and how vulnerable everybody is, like, it makes me feel like I can say anything and you guys aren't going to judge me and you're still going to accept me here every week. And this is a feeling I have wanted my whole life. So thank you for, you know, developing this. And I'm so glad that you're back from your vacation. I'm jealous that you were over there, that I can't wait to go on Instagram and see the pictures I haven't been on, but I'm just very happy to be here. So thank you.
This is my third meeting, my first share. I was
ripping the Band-Aid off.
Ripping the Band-Aid off. Absolutely so nervous, but emotional flashbacks. I gotta share. Probably I'm the identified patient and the scapegoat of my family. I'm a survivor of child labor, and my emotional flashbacks have really been, take me back to a time when I was in the child labor settings and I wasn't allowed to go to school, wasn't allowed to see friends. I was stuck in my home, having to work on is actually cool work, is like oil and gas control units for flame ignition. So the work was cool, but the conditions were terrible. I was in denial for most of my life. I'd have emotional flashbacks pretty rarely, just whenever I was gaslit or some other scapegoating like dynamics would send me into emotional flashback. But when I found out my partner was pregnant with our first child is when I entered a kind of permanent state of emotional flashback, which is now almost 4 years ago now. And at first, didn't know what was going on. It took me, it was 2 years of being stuck in this state of feeling like I'm going to die. I want to say anxiety, but I'm learning that scapegoat anxiety is different than what regular people experience as anxiety. It's a whole nother level too. I want to say it like reflects that fear of abandonment and that rejection from the family unit, that the fear of annihilation. Went 2 years, and then I just it finally clicked of being in this emotional state for so long that like I just don't feel safe. And I started doing the work, started reading all the CPTSD books, started going to Al-Anon meetings, started to really take a deep look at my family system. And then I've learned that the emotional flashbacks is my body's way of telling me that I'm in danger of scapegoating abuse. I knew that my parents would not be excited about me having children. My dad actually drank himself into the hospital, into a month-long stay at the hospital after finding out that I was having children. And there's just been there really wasn't much scapegoat abuse, and I did feel pretty safe in the world until he found out that I was having children, and that's when the scapegoat abuse just ramped right up. It's been a long time. It feels so unsurvivable, especially when it's constant and 24/7. And I hope one day that I can get out of the scapegoat, or not scapegoat, get out of the emotional flashback response and feel safe again. And I know that this is the right work to be doing, and I think I'll end my share there.
So glad you're here.
Thank you.